Welcome, guys.
Hey, buddies.
How was your week in the pandemic?
Pretty good. It's just another week in the pandemic. We'll make it though.
It's all just one big smear of home time.
Wow. I'm really excited today, tonight, to be interviewing Lisa Brown, who's an illustrator Woo-hoo! And cartoonist. And she's the creator of books like the Airport Book, How to Be. She's collaborated with Lemony Snicket on several books, the Latke who couldn't stop screaming, and the Goldfish Ghost. And like last month, she just came out with her graphic novel, The Phantom Twin, which explores a young woman and her relationship with her deceased, departed conjoined twin, and in her life in the sideshow circuit, and just like her relationship with her sister and her family in the sideshow, and just like her search for love and freedom. And then just this past week, and I think it's this past week or last week, Lisa came out with another book just to outdo herself and
so prolific.
Yeah.
Just constantly working.
With a new book called Long Story Short, which is basically like she condenses the work of these of classic literature in just three panels. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know. I could never do that. So we need to talk to her about that. So welcome to the program, Lisa Brown. Woo!
I'm here.
Oh, there she is.
Was that an accurate introduction?
That was a great introduction. Except
I just
for the prolific part. I don't
know. Oh, no.
Because you know that two books coming out means I finished two books last year.
Yeah.
And I've been doing nothing since.
But it seems like, but we have no measure of time right now, especially, I mean, we're still, it's like still April, like, I mean, it's, so you still have a lot of time to finish another book this year, Lisa.
Well, or I'm two. Working on one, and it's really slow.
Is it another graphic novel?
No, it's a picture book. Look, I brought, it's about
Apollo. Oh, she's going to show stuff. This is the cool thing about Zoom.
And I might have to redo it, because.
Why?
Well, because it's about the hospital, and maybe every future will change.
Oh, it'll be fine.
Yeah, that looks problematic right now, Lisa Brown.
Yeah, it's only problematic because the patient doesn't have a mask on.
Oh.
At least I'm not doing the Airport Book now.
Yeah.
Oh.
Boy, this pandemic really has it in for you.
I got it the worst.
Yeah.
Sitting alone in my studio, doing the same things I would do normally. We're really very lucky as cartoonists.
That's what we were saying before, is that we're kind of primed or trained for this type of thing, even though I'm not really good as being a cartoonist. So so I guess this is good training for me now.
Even when I draw, though, like I don't like drawing at home as much. I have to go to coffee shops and stuff like that. So it's kind of a bummer.
My husband is really struggling without going to coffee shops, because that's where he writes.
Oh, really?
And now he's not even alone in his own home, because everyone's there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's pretty crazy. So let's talk. Are we gonna talk about Phantom Twin mostly?
Yes, we're gonna talk about everything.
All right.
So let's start with that, because.
So we've all read Phantom Twin, right?
Yes, I love this book. I think this is such a great book. When I was reading it, I read it again today. Again, I got super sad again.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I read it, and I got super sad again, and I read the front cover, I was like, oh, yeah, Neil Gaiman is correct. It's going to break my heart over and
over
again.
What did he say? He said it was going to break your heart over and over.
Yeah, did it two times already. So when you were saying that you when did you decide, you conceive of the story, and what was it that made you want to like do a story about this particular subject matter?
I'm afraid to go back through my files to see how long ago it was that I started this book, but it was years and years and years ago.
Oh, wow.
And I wrote the script pretty quickly and then put it away for a while. And I don't know, I mean, I think I've always been interested in circuses and carnivals and sort of people with differences, like different gifts, different sort of ways they walk through the world. I don't know if you guys have read Geek Love by Catherine Dunn. It's an amazing novel, and it's about a family in a freak show. It's a parents who work at a carnival who take drugs in order to get pregnant with freaks. Mm-hmm. And it's told from the point of, it's very dark. It's told from the point of view of their children. So, it's sort of a cult classic, as you might imagine.
Do any of these, the characters that you have in this book, do they reflect any buddy that you know, or are these characters all just completely fictional? How, you know, and what's your process for like just character development in this? Because the characters in this book really feel very alive. Like they all have like personalities that just seems like, you would have to, there's got to be some context to make them this real, you know what I mean? So I was wondering how you like went about creating the characters and how you made them feel so like real.
Oh, thank you. Well, I mean, I don't think they're based on anyone I know, but probably everyone is always based on people you know inside. But a lot of the characters are based on real life historical figures. Loosely, very loosely. So like there were a pair of conjoined twins named Daisy and Violet Hilton. They had very sad lives. They were like stars on the vaudeville circuit in the early 20th century, and then they became movie stars, and then they sort of died in poverty. And that's the story of a lot of these people. Mm-hmm. They had like a brief period of fame and fortune and then died in poverty. But some of them, I mean, there was I have a bearded lady who's married mm-hmm. to an alligator skin man, and those were real people. There was a, Priscilla Bejano. She was the bearded lady married to the alligator skin man. So things like that. I mean, they're all based on real historical
characters. Oh.
So you mentioned
a lot of research.
Yeah. And you mentioned in the author's note that you have had this fascination for since you were a child. Like, what do you think drew you to it?
Well, I think I was trying to think about that. Did any of you ever read the Ripley's Believe It or Not books?
Yes.
Well, those were really like, I was really sort of obsessed with them. I like thinking about extraordinary things, like extraordinary people, extraordinary events, extraordinary circumstances, extraordinary talents. And I think that I like to think about people who live on the fringes of society, however that would happen. So like if you're born different, you're on the fringes of society. If you are from a cultural or demographic minority, then you feel like you're on the fringes of society. And I think that almost every teenager has that feeling. Like, I am an outsider. Everyone's looking at me and I'm different from everyone else. And like, you're walking through the world and you think that you're like on display.
Mm.
And I think that's kind of universal. I've always liked thinking about that.
Does having a teenage son bring some of these kind of you see some of this kind of like adolescence kind of outsiderism, that part of it?
I think so. I think I have an only child. Mm. So, and I was, I had two siblings, but so I feel about, I think about his loneliness a lot. Mm. And like, if he, when in terms of the conjoined twin, what I find fascinating about conjoined twins or about twins in general is that you always have someone there. You have someone there who is just like you, even though they're not always the same. Mm-hmm. Who's like, you're not lonely. There's always someone there.
Oh.
I like to think about that. I felt that lonely a lot when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
When I was reading it, I agree with Tin that the characters are just so alive and just, it just build a strong connection to these characters, especially like having the same feelings of, you know, alienation and feeling like a kind of not the normal person. And I just was curious as to, I know that you said that these are based on people that you researched, but I know that you've done a lot of character study. Like you do a lot of like drawing of like how the characters will look like and like what they would wear. And I don't know if that's just for this book, or do you do that for all of the books that you do, like when you do the illustration for things, or is this particularly just for this book? Or, and then I have another question to that, is that, sorry, it's a long question, I'm just excited. How is it different, you know, from this being a graphic novel opposed to doing it like an illustration work for a children's book, for example?
So I guess the first question about research and stuff like that, I have this, I think it was a long time ago now. It came out in 2010, so 10 years ago. I did a illustrated young adult novel with this wonderful author named Adele Griffin. Mm-hmm. And it was a book called Picture the Dead, and it was a historical fiction that took place during the American Civil War. And I based all my character studies on old photographs, mostly from the Library of Congress, like daguerreotypes and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I did a ton of research, and part of it took place in like a Confederate prison camp. And I I researched the hell out of it. Like, I wanted to make sure that my characters were in like the right troop at the right time, that we're going to the right place and the right battlefield, and like no one in the world would care except for me. And I went real deep. So I do things like that. And I went real deep in this too. And I feel like I have all this like knowledge about circus sideshows and circus freaks and the whole culture of carny culture, and I'm done. I can't do anything with it. I guess I have to run away and join the circus.
Where you go to Florida, right?
I go to Florida, yeah. That's where they retire.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I know, but I didn't know that when I was like, oh, wow. Is Florida like the haven, like where people...
Well, that town.
Oh, okay.
Gibsonton, Florida. They had pretty lax laws about keeping exotic pets.
Mm.
So say you were like a retired lion tamer, you could go and you could keep your lions in the backyard. And then, you know, it's just like you flock together with people who you feel kinship with. Like we're doing right now.
Yeah. I love, you know, when I was reading the book, there's no real time period. It's not like, you know, that it's like current or if it happened in the past. I really like that. And there are like clues to tell you that, okay, this might be like kind of like old timey, like at a different, like a time in history, but it is like so relevant. It doesn't feel like it could be any time. Did you, when you were writing or drawing this, did you have like a certain time period when you're drawing this for, or did you want it, did you intentionally leave it like ambiguous?
I wanted to leave it a little ambiguous, but it's clearly like the beginning of the 20th century. So in my head, it was between like 1920 and 1935. So I wanted it to, I mean, I wanted to be at a time where the freak shows were still around. And really by the 1960s, they were dying out. For a lot of different reasons. And one of them was that medicine, modern medicine, could sort of change the way, well, it changed, there weren't as many people born with anomalies who weren't quote unquote fixed. And then also the disability rights movement happened. And, you know, this was seen as horribly exploitative, which in most cases it was. So, you know, that changed things, and one by one everything was shut down, although there were freaks who complained and said, this is like my life and I love doing this and I'm very successful and making a lot of money and you're shutting me down because, you know, it feels like pity, whereas this is what I want to do. But at the same time, I mean, they put people on display. I mean, it's horrific.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's one of the great things about this book, though. You know, you display those different, the dynamic of like, it's kind of a horrible life in a lot of ways, but in a lot of ways, you know, these people now have a family and they have a livelihood of sorts, and some of them feel a little bit empowered by it. And so it's kind of, I thought that was a really interesting presentation of all of that stuff.
Thank you. I mean, I like to think about things that are complicated and not
right.
just one way. Like,
yeah, the family dynamic of the this group of people, this like community of people, I was also very interested in. Like one of the funnest thing about this book, I think, is the rivalry between the people that think that they are real freaks. Yeah. And you know that, and the people that that they think are, I guess, what they say, fake freaks or something.
Yeah.
And I thought that was real interesting. Is that something that you came across in your research as well, or is that something that you just thought that, you know, you just decided to write?
Yeah, I don't think I came across any rivalry. I think I just thought that there would be. I am born extraordinary and you're just pretending to be extraordinary.
That's
I mean, thought she was saying that straight to us. I thought
I was born extraordinary.
Yeah, we'll just take that out of context.
Wow.
Yeah. I love that scene with the mermaid. You know, where they were just like, everyone was just kind of like talking crap about her, and you can see it turns back and she's just like, I don't like you guys, you know. It's it's such a great, like, in one panel you created such a such an interesting dynamic between these two communities.
Right.
I thought it was really great. Lisa, this is your first graphic novel, right?
Yeah,
it is.
So what is what was your road to being a cartoonist? Yeah, I know that you're an amazing illustrator. We've all seen like a lot of your picture books, and what made you decide, hey, I want to do a graphic novel? And what was the transition from drawing picture books and illustration into graphic novels? Was that a smooth transition for you, or did you? You know, was there a lot of that you have to learn? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the learning curve is pretty steep. I feel like I'm still learning a ton, and my next graphic novel, I know what not to do, but I'm sure I'll have, like, after I finish that one, I'll feel like I have a lot to learn. But I started out...
Yeah, I'd like to know
I was going to ask what not to do.
That actually was a question.
Oh, I can tell you a couple of things that I learned what not to do.
If I'm doing it wrong.
I wouldn't have so many changes of clothing.
Yeah, why don't you Charlie Brown that up?
The continuity. I don't think I ever want to do conjoined twins anymore because the right hand, left hand thing, like who's on which side, and when they turn around, it's the different side, and like what? That's really hard. So don't don't do a graphic novel with conjoined twins.
I think the fashion is one of the best parts of this book. Yeah. So I would be bummed out if you had done less change of clothes. I love the fashion.
Sorry, Lisa, so you're going to have to continue to do that.
Yeah, you got to keep doing that. Lisa, that's part of your style. Now you can't stop doing that. That's the thing now. That's the
also, all your books have to be about conjoined twins from now on.
No, all your characters are conjoined.
That's your thing.
No, like, I really love the fashion in this. Like, of the outfits that the painted lady, you know, the lady with the snakes and stuff like that. It's just so beautiful. Like, you know, like, I love this little number right there with the fur coat, fur lined jacket.
Yeah, I love her fur coat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And her turban.
And I know that Rena is a huge, classics movie buff, so I'm sure she was, like,
really into
it. So have you seen Freaks?
I have. One of us.
One of us. Yeah, that's really great. There's an even one I like better by the same director, who's Todd Browning, called The Unknown. And it's silent. And it stars a very, very, very young... Now I can't remember her name. I'll have to look it up right here.
Look at IMDb.
You can look it up. And Lon Chaney. And have you found it yet?
No, I'm not that fast, please.
It's called The Unknown.
Todd Browning.
We're all just this is a podcast of people googling things.
Todd Browning, there he is, it is. Oh my goodness, Joan Crawford.
Oh, okay.
So a very young Joan Crawford, and it's about. She's like the assistant to, she's the girl who they throw the knives at a circus. And Lon Chaney plays a man with no arms who throws knives with his feet. And she's in love with the circus strongman, but she has a thing about hands. She's very afraid of hands. And so that's why Lon Chaney decides to be armless. He's not really armless. He's pretending to be armless in order to win the love of Joan Crawford, who's afraid of hands.
We got to first.
This is great. We
got to get back on track. But how does he pretend? How does he pretend that he's armless?
He wraps himself up. And he has an assistant who binds his arms.
Oh.
And she doesn't know that he doesn't have arms.
Right. And apparently he has a really good foot double who does
foot double. can you tell me more about the character? I mean, you can continue, but the not that character.
You want to talk more about it? I know what Tin asked me. Cartoon versus picture books.
Go back to my question.
Let's pause on that because I wanted to also learn more about the character of Tommy, the tattoo artist. He's so sweet. And then I just wanted to know how it evolved.
I love him. I don't know. I like artists a lot. And he was an artist. I like the idea of, I wanted to give Isabel, the remaining twin, some agency. So she just wasn't someone to be put on display, but she's an artist. And so I wanted her to sort of find her way through the world through art. And tattooing is an art form. So, but it also, if you become a freak through tattooing, especially at that time.
Yeah, that's such an interesting idea.
Because it's art and a freak, just combining those two things.
Right.
It's beautiful, but also, I don't know, I'm not going to say horrific. An artist is a horrific thing.
It's just unusual. But it's a choice.
Unique.
Being born a conjoined twin is not a choice.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
if you're tattooing your entire body, that's a choice.
Well, I like that she, what did she say? She said, I drew blood to become what I am. Mm-hmm. You know, that line where like they're telling mm-hmm. her that she's normal. And she's like, no, I drew blood. Yeah. I thought that was a really great line. But I was, the whole time I was reading this, I was like, I think that because of our modern sensibility that like somebody that has, you know, all these tattoos are not even considered freaks anymore, really, yeah. right? So like the whole time I was like, she's just a lady. I don't understand. And it's like,
she had snakes too.
The mindset that
yeah, she also had period. Snakes. Well, but yeah. apparently, so I did a bunch of research on tattoos, and apparently it was the late 1800s, it was aristocrats who got tattoos.
Right.
Oh.
And it only
sort of like a fancy thing.
Isn't that, and it was because it was expensive and difficult, right? Like.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It was just like a fad. It was like sailors in the West. It was sailors and aristocrats.
I just know that it became like, once it became more widely accessible, it right. suddenly became like a, you know, a mark of trashy people, you know, right. like once everybody could sure. afford it.
And now, once again, it's all of us aristocrats who have them.
Yes. The nouveau riche, the nouveau riche.
So, Rhea, are you done? Can we go back to my
question?
Oh,
wow.
Please?
Okay. This is how it usually goes, Lisa.
So, Lisa, what was the transition from doing illustration to doing a graphic novel? And
I started out cartooning in college. So I had a cartoon strip, a comic strip in the college paper.
Oh wow!
That ran for a couple of years, and. When I graduated college, I graduated with like an English and history and philosophy degree, and I didn't mm-hmm. think I was going to do any art because I took a couple of arts classes and they were too hard.
but did you like art before?
It was my favorite thing. I thought I was going to be an artist. Huh. But instead I did this comic and I doodled. And I had this teacher, I applied to grad school in English. And when I asked for a recommendation for one of my professors, he was like, but you know the doodles that you do all day long in my class? Like you should be doing that.
That's a really cool teacher though.
Yeah.
I thought he was mad at me for doodling, but he wasn't, he was happy. Yeah, so, and I like submitted cartoons when I graduated college, but it just didn't ever go anywhere. Mm. So I've always loved comics, but I didn't know about graphic novels for a really long time. Like mm-hmm. there was comic books, and there was Archie for the girls, mm-hmm. but I didn't know about, you know, not until I read, like everyone else, not until I read Mouse. I was like, oh, wow. And then it went from there.
So I like the idea that you did a comic strip in college because that's very like when I would read your long story short strips mm-hmm. that seems like that's where that background probably came in handy because it's you know when you so for people who don't know the you originally did a long story short for New York Times?
The Chronicle. Oh,
the San Francisco Chronicle, that's right. And it's a strip where you take a book and you break it down into basically three panels, right? And I think it's genius. We unfortunately couldn't get the book to review before this. Oh, that book
look
was
how
amazing.
She just... Yeah, that guy she just rubbed that.
But in. I have read a lot of the strips as they were coming out in the San Francisco Chronicle, and I've mm-hmm. always just loved it. And I've never understood how you were able to take a long book and boil it down concisely to these three panels. And now knowing that you used to be a strip cartoonist, like a comic strip cartoonist, I can see how that background probably helped out in the making of this, but what is your process when you not to like you know go to a whole another book, we probably will go back to the Phantom Twin
and stuff especially like that, especially for that book, I mean what was the process of trying to narrow down like like condense it to three panels.
Right.
Like, how do you do that?
Well,
so you read so geniusly.
You read a book or you reread a book, or you read a book in high school and you can barely remember it, so you get the BBC series on it.
That's how I do it.
And you think about, like, what about that book is like the core of it? Like, what do you think of the most when you think of the book? And sometimes it's like the actual, like, most important part of the book. And sometimes it's just something weird. So when I read The Great Gatsby, which I had never read in high school, so I read it to make a cartoon of it. And it turns out that it's a really good book.
You got to tell the sophomores in my
I know. You shouldn't be reading that stuff in high school. Like, later. So, right. But when I think about The Great Gatsby, what I think about is how Daisy is obsessed with his shirts. Like, they go into the house and she, like, finds his shirts and she's like, oh, he has such beautiful shirts. So, like, that's what my cartoon's about. I'm trying to think of, like, Madame Bovary I read in high school and I hated it so much. And, like, why do they give this book to high school students? It's about, like, a desperate woman in an unloving marriage. Like, that's not something they can relate to. But, like, all I think about is how she took arsenic and how horrible that was. So, like, that's the whole book for me, is she took arsenic.
And would they tell you what book you had to do, or did you just, you came up with, you were,
I,
like,
I want
to do
them. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. How long would it take you to do a strip like that?
Once I get the idea, it usually takes me a day or a day and a half.
Oh.
But it depends if I'm drawing, you know, sometimes you just can't draw.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, a lot of time. Redrawing the same guy over and over and over again. Like that.
I have a question that's sort of related to that, because I'm really struck by the composition of your pages in The Phantom Twin, just how beautiful the composition is, and just everything sort of seems like it's in the perfect place, and there's not, like, it just seems like just the right amount of detail. And how do you arrive at that? Like, what's your process like when you, what's your roughest page look like? And, like, do you go through a lot of iterations, or does it just flow like this?
It's not so many iterations, but, like, my roughs are really, really rough, like scribbles, to figure out what's on every page. And I did most of it, actually, I went to an artist colony for the first time. And that was really exciting. And I was there for about 3 weeks. And every day I thumbnailed. Like, I just sat in the chair and thumbnailed. And that was really exciting. And then they just get I take the thumbnails and I blow them up. And I draw the tight sketches over the thumbnails on vellum. And then I fall in love with my pencils. And I can't believe when I start inking how much I hate the ink. And I wish that the book could have been in pencil.
Wow, really?
Yeah. I agree with that too. Like, whenever, I don't know, it's maybe just the shading or just the texture of it, but I love just having them in pencils. Yeah. Like, I don't know, it feels like raw and
it's fearless, like, yeah. You're not scared of the line, because you know it's
right. It doesn't have to be perfect. Yeah,
there is an aliveness to pencils that you lose after you ink. Like, whenever I pencil and I ink on the computer, so whenever I have this beautiful pencil line and I'm inking on top of it in another layer, and I turn off the pencil layer, it automatically, like, just becomes less alive. You know, like, the ink lines just don't, like, it's fun to ink because I love inking.
Yeah.
But when you turn off that pencil line, then all of a sudden the vibe, like, it's not as
it's
exciting
tight.
Anymore.
It's like you're contriving to reproduce a spontaneous moment. Which
exactly.
Is,
I feel like that's it's something I'm going to work towards probably for the rest of my life, is how to capture that spontaneity in the finals. I was reading one of your quarantine comics. You talk about adding background.
Yeah.
And that's something I keep thinking about, because I like, how much background do you want to put in there so that you don't have, and I, and this one was a struggle because it's conjoined twins talking to each other. And so like, how do you organize the page so it's just not two heads facing each other talking, talking, talking? Because they can't even move away from each other.
Yeah.
So you can't have them cross the room because they're there stuck together. So that's not just two faces.
I was actually going to bring that up because I felt like this book was lush with beautiful backgrounds. I like when you're the scene of the midway, or the, you know, I really felt like I was there. There are parts where, like, you know, one of the hardest thing about drawing backgrounds for me is, especially if you're basing your location that you when you're doing your comic on somewhere that, like, you have to come up with your head, like, you don't have you don't have access to a a midway like this, or a carnival like this, to oh, okay, I want to see what it looks like behind the lady with the crystal ball, like, what is it going to look like, you know? So, like, you, like, if I was drawing, I've been drawing these comics, it's all in my house. So I'm like, oh, let's see what happened, what it looks like from behind where I'm sitting on the kitchen table. I can go there, take a look at it. Sometimes I even take a picture of it. But when you have, like, the other easy thing is to come up with a background that, like, a setting that is completely made up. And in that way, it doesn't really matter, because you're just like, it's space, so that's what it looks like. But for you, you did the hardest of them all. You had a realistic fictional background. So in some places you just had to be like, oh, I guess I'm gonna put a trailer, and I gotta figure out what the trailer looks like. So
I had a lot of photo reference. Lot of photo reference. And then one thing as I did, there's I saw this really great movie called Nightmare Alley, which is based on a book. Mm-hmm. And it's about sort of a carnival I think it takes place in the 50s. And I really liked sort of the layout of some of the scenes. And so I would watch it on my computer and stop it at a point where I just really liked the how everything was playing out on screen, and then I would sort of take a picture of that and sketch it. So I have all these sketches that were the layouts, and that's how I got some of the, like, walking through the trailers sort of looks.
That's what makes it feel so real and alive to me, is that, like, it's not like the big, like, backgrounds that seem like normal. It's like just the it's
very intimate, basically. Yeah, it's very intimate.
You built a world, like, in your head. I could conceive that you probably drew out, like a whole map of what this place looks like before you start, you know. But it just feels so real.
Yeah, I did a map. I did, like, schematics of the inside of the trailers.
Oh my gosh. Oh,
wow. I drew the tattoo parlor because I wanted to make sure when they face different directions, the same things.
Oh, cool. Wow. I would have loved to have that in the...
Exhausting. Well, I think I showed the tattoo maps, right? At the event. Front, back, side view of the tattoo.
Oh, right.
So that I could make sure that all the tattoos were in the same places.
We're lined up. Mm-hmm.
That's another thing I'm never going to do, is have a tattooed person, like a completely tattooed person in my graphic novel.
Oh, because you have to draw the exact
same tattoo. It's so hard.
I love that the reason that you, some of the reasons that this is so hard is because you care so much. Whereas a lot of people are like, oh, that's easy, because if I was drawing a tattoo person and they were different in the next panel, I'd be like, okay, cool.
Yeah, the reader will figure that out.
I had two amazing editors who were like eagle-eyed.
No way.
But there's no, you know, she has a button here, but not here. And I mean, they would really like, oh, she doesn't have a tattoo there, but she has it in the next thing. So it drove me nuts, but they were amazing. They're amazing.
When you drew these, is this all traditional media? Do you use pencil and then ink on top of pencil and then erase the pencil? What's this the process for Phantom Twin like?
So I draw my pencils on vellum and then I scan them in and darken them and print them out again. So the line is nice and dark, and then I put it on a light box with paper over it. And so I draw my inks on the over the pencils on a light box.
Can I ask you why the is the vellum? Do you draw it on vellum because
you're looking at
the thumbnails underneath?
Yeah, because I'm doing thumbnails underneath, and you know, if I want to move people around, I could take another piece of vellum and move. I don't know. I just learned that way.
Okay.
But it was.
Are you inking on vellum too?
Computer. No, I'm inking on. I just used AquaBee notebook paper.
Okay.
Do you know AquaBee?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it was cheap. I do my picture books on arches, and I knew I could.
Yeah. Yeah. How many?
Do that.
How many hundreds? Yeah.
And then how did you color this one?
Yeah, because the color's amazing.
The color is
the colors amazing. Are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And the color is all thanks to Lei Wen Pham. Mm.
Oh.
Who I was going to watercolor it because I watercolor everything. And she said I shouldn't.
Yeah.
She said that it will drive me crazy and it won't be, the consistency will be really hard. And I said, well, I want it to look watercolory and I don't know how to color computers, computer color comics. And she said, I'm going to teach you and I'm going to set up a template. And she created the template for me.
Wow.
And taught me how to use it. It was amazing.
So it's digitally colored and it's your first foray into digital coloring pretty much?
Well, I've done a lot of work on, I used to do a lot of my art digitally on Illustrator years ago, and the young adult book I did was in Illustrator, but I'm not that adept at, I mean, I use Photoshop a lot with my traditional illustrations just to like clean them up, but I've never done like a full-length graphic novel digitally created. I bought a Cintiq.
And how did that feel for you? Is that something that you would want to do in the next graphic novel, or is that?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I would do it again. It worked out, I think, really well. Like I'm happier with the color than I am with any of the watercolored pieces.
It's really vivid.
Did you have like a certain palette?
Mm-hmm. I made the palette in watercolors, and then I sampled the colors and created.
Because
I think like the palette has this great, this very period, you know, very back to the time of that, you know, the turn of the century
kind of
feel. Yeah, and I didn't know if that was part of your research too, was just figuring out those colors.
I looked at color palettes. I looked at, you know, I just, yeah.
I just feel like when I see this, the color palette and the painting style, even though you're not doing it watercolor like you normally do, it feels like a Lisa Brown book, even though it's digitally colored. You know what I mean?
It's a Lei Wen Pham book.
It's such an interesting way is that like even though you're using a completely different tool here, it still feels like a painting that you would do. I think the painting is really great. It's like definitely one of the highlights of the book is this beautiful color. And the color, I really think, creates a mood for this book. Believe it or not, when I was reading this book and when I was becoming very sad, the colors are what made me not fall off the deep end with just like, you know what I mean? The colors are what made me be like, okay, everything, it's like soothing. It made me feel like everything was going to be okay, which is very interesting for a color palette to be able to do. You know, it's like, it's very, it's a pretty hard, like, so when you did your long story short book, is that all computer colored or is that all?
Yeah, that was computer colored. I used to, when I started, I actually colored them in Illustrator.
Oh, okay.
I don't know
how
why.
Do you do that?
I traced everything with vectors and then I threw the color in and I put the line over it. I was more comfortable in Illustrator than in Photoshop. But then when I started, I did about 50 more cartoons that are original to this book. And those I colored in Photoshop. But the color's all very flat. So it was a little different.
Yeah. Yeah. Because these colors are not flat. Anything but flat. I also enjoy the texture that you used in it too. It just makes it feel like if you told me that this was painted, I would be like, oh yeah, that looks like it's painted.
Yeah, it doesn't jump out as digitally colored. You know, I looked at it and I was really wanted to know how it was colored because, you know, it looks so great.
Thank you. Yeah, I felt like it shouldn't be flat. I mean, some graphic novels should be flat, and I felt like mine, it would lose some of that old fashionedness that I want. But the comic strips, they should be flat.
Yeah. So, what is next for you in terms of graphic novels?
In terms of graphic novels,
or in terms of writing, or are you? Well, I'm excited for the follow up to this book.
Hospital book.
That inappropriate hospital book.
That's
right?
My new book. And then I'm working on another story. That's another graphic novel, maybe for a little bit younger. Kids, but not too young, like maybe middle grade. Mm-hmm. And it'll have ghosts in it too.
I have to tell you, okay, my son, when we came back from your event and we at the booksmith and I brought the book home and like he,
my
next
only
day.
Event the event before the plague.
Yeah, gee, that's a coincidence. And he woke up and like the first thing he did was just open this book.
Aww.
And he's like read it how many times. He's like 10 years old. And so
so great.
And then he's like,
oh, I gave this book to Jane, who is 6 years old.
Oh no.
No. I came back and I was like, did you read that, Jane? She's like, she said, she's a pretty advanced reader. And she was like, clearly. I loved it, but it was very sad. And I was like, oh.
You know what? Yeah, so my son like, found out that we were interviewing tonight. And he's like, oh my God. And I said, yeah, do you have anything you want to ask? And he said, yes. He said, can you please ask her how she made such a dramatic book? Yeah, he's a dramatic person, but he was just like a dramatic and crazy story, and I'm like, oh, well, I don't know how you answer that.
How many times has he read your book?
Yeah, he actually hasn't finished.
That's amazing. I mean, you know, you work so long for so many years,
yeah,
and it just takes forever. And then when it came home, like when I got the first copy, my son had been seeing me do it all along for years and years and years. And he stood at like the kitchen island and just read it in like 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh God, like that's it. It took me, you know, 5 years to write. And
but it's one of those books though that you just want to read again and again, though. It's not like one of those things like, oh, okay, that was tough sledding there.
Son really loves, like, he was obsessed for a really long time with all the Amulet books. Mm. And I took him to see Kazu Kibishi at an event. And he, like, went up and he was just like, why does Max, this panel, have this kind of cape, and then there was a rip on it, but then there wasn't a rip on it. Like, he had read so
oh my gosh.
And that's like all you want, right?
As because you must have loved that.
To be like read so deeply, like no one's gonna read a novel that deeply.
I think if you were an adult, like I think a lot of kids, when you give them graphic novels, kids are very excited to tell you how fast they read a book. because I think they can get, they think it's a mark of like of their intelligence that they read a whole graphic novel in like 5 minutes or whatever.
Right.
But I think for like adult readers like me or like Josh and stuff like that, like when we read graphic novels, like I take a long this the first time I read this book, it took me like, you know, 2 or 3 days because I really do like look at everything, you know, like I do look at the all because the nuance in this book, every panel is just packed full of things, which I think is amazing, you know, like just like little details of like on the nightstand, the necklace is on the nightstand or like when she's
that little cat.
The little cat. Or there's, you know, I love like things like when the one character says elephant, you know, and just like the accent, you know, the those little details is like what takes I think if you are an experienced reader of graphic novels and comics, those are you know like what you're looking at, and that's what takes you so long to read the story. So I don't think you should, you know, worry about that. I think that this book is kind of like, it just has so much details on it. There's no way that like, you know.
Yeah, you got a bunch of grown up nerds. Just But can we talk about though, like, you know, how it is to like kind of switch being an author of like graphic novels for like teenagers and then doing children's books? Like, how do you change, you know, put that cap on from one book to another?
I don't know. I feel like, I mean, this book, The Phantom Twin, was like, it was so long in the making, and I felt like it was closer to who I am than any of the picture books I've done. Because like the picture books, I love picture books, and it's really nice to tell a sweet story, but or even a slightly dark, but it has to be sweet story ultimately. But The Phantom Twin, I could be as dark as I want to be. And I like
that a
lot. You could break our hearts over and over.
Just with Neil's heart. Said. Just want to break Neil's heart.
little kids, you can't do that.
It does amaze me, you know, because I don't really do very dramatic kind of sad comics very often, so it does amaze me how you can create so much investment in a character in such little pages, you know, because you know the big sad thing happens I think on page 35, you know, of this
everyone's
like
turn to page 35.
Yeah, of this like
that's bad.
Yeah, 200 page book. And only in 35 pages, you somehow make the reader care so much about this character.
Yeah.
And it's like 35 pages in, that's not very long to make somehow make me care about this character, you know. It's like when you're writing, how, you know, what is your process into being like, okay, I got him, you know, because if they don't care about this character by the time this big thing happens, then, you know, that's the whole book, right? Right? They need to care about this character. So is there you don't have a formula or anything like that you're like, okay, or is this just like an innate feeling you have that when you're writing, you're like, okay, by now, you know, when this happens, people should be like sad, invested in the characters.
Yeah, no, it wasn't that smart. I just wrote it. I mean, but I wrote it, and then at one point it just didn't feel like it was in the right order. So I had a lot of different things taped to index cards and all around the floor of my studio, and just like moving chapters around and seeing where to go where.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a couple of really good readers who helped me with it before I even started the art.
Oh, okay.
That was really helpful because I've never written anything this long before. I mean, I collaborated on the young adult novel, but my collaborator, Adele, was such a brilliant writer who had done so many novels that I really didn't need to pull any weight.
Yeah.
So this was the first time I did it on my own. Yeah, I don't know. I can't explain it except for like.
It is. Yeah, it's really good. I remember when the first time I saw your Phantom Twin pages, it was like we did an art show, you know, at the San Francisco Museum Library, and I saw the pages and I was like, this is beautiful. Now if the story, you know, because it's, you know, a lot of times you see a comic where the art is just beautiful, but then the story is like whatever, and then you're like, okay, or opposite. But I think it really paid off. I thought it was amazing. When I saw the art, I was like, this art is amazing. If the story could be anywhere near as great as the art, this is going to be a great book. And it is an amazing book, I think.
Yeah. I put a lot of myself into it. It's a little disappointing that I'm not actually getting to go places with it.
Mm-hmm.
There were some conferences I was going to go to, and sort of, I was very excited to sort of connect with more comics people, because I'm mm-hmm. in this picture book world, which is very separate in many ways. More and more, we're like
yes.
intermingling, but I wanted to sort of be in that world a little more, and I feel like it's hard when you're sitting at home.
Yeah, like, have you been to a Comic Con?
Are you sure, Lisa, you want to do that?
I was at WonderCon.
Oh.
Years ago. And that's where I connected with Lark.
Oh, okay. Aww.
Because I had been a fan of hers in the early, late 90s, I want to say, when Long Tail Kitty came out. Yeah. And I remember it was online, but you had to, like, write a letter and get it mailed to you. It was that long ago, and she mailed us. We bought like zines of Long Tail Kitty, and then I finally met her at WonderCon years later.
Oh my gosh.
I would have loved to see you signing at Comic Con, and I am disappointed that is. Hopefully, when this is all over, you will get a little bit of that experience. But
yeah,
I think that's going to be such an interesting dichotomy to see you signing and being amongst the
who are the comic cartoonists that you would want to, you know, see that you haven't met
that I haven't met,
yeah, that you'd like to meet. Oh, I don't know,
because I've met a lot of people, which is really exciting. I'm really in love with the Hernandez brothers.
Oh.
I would love to meet them. I think they're like the best artists ever. They're really, really great. I met Linda Berry, but only briefly. I accosted her in a hotel lobby. I would love to like spend time with her because she's the best.
All right, you've got pretty good taste.
Yeah, these are pretty good.
Who I'm obsessed with right
you're
now.
You're totally breaking our heart.
Isabel Greenberg? Have you seen Isabel Greenberg's stuff? Mm-hmm. She's up in Canada, and her new book, now I can't remember what it's called, but it's the story of the Bronte sisters. But she did this beautiful book called The Encyclopedia of Early Earth a couple of years ago. She's amazing. I'd like to meet Emily Carroll.
Oh,
I love her book.
You know, it'd be cool. We could try to have them reach out to each other online. They could do like a live, because everything is like, you know, on IG. Yeah. I was going to ask, you know, what your next online event was.
You're going to be part of the first second Comic-Con, right?
I know. Yeah.
I'm going to do that. And I'm doing the Everywhere Book Festival. I'm going to be on a panel with Gene.
Yeah.
Which I'm very nervous, but I have to draw a portrait of him, I think.
Oh, gosh.
I have to practice. And tomorrow night, my husband and I are going to be sitting in our kitchen talking live about Long Story Short.
Just to someone?
To Instagram. To Instagram Live.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So before all this happened, were you already familiar with some of this, like, going live technology, or all this like stuff that you've learned because of this weird quarantine thing that we're at?
Well, I knew it could happen, but I didn't know how to do it. My husband's getting really into it, which is funny because he just, he didn't have a cell phone until like last year.
Oh my gosh.
And now he's having me film him making cocktails.
Oh man.
I saw that he's doing a, he does these, I guess at the is it at the Booksmith or is it that he does these like silent reading?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's for Booksmith. It's the Bindery, which is across the street.
Oh, yeah. And I saw that he's doing that online.
Yeah.
Right?
It's basically, you just sit there with him and read a book.
Yeah.
Is that Zoom? Is that on Zoom?
I don't think it's, I think, I don't think it's just how they're doing it. I think it's like, put on some music, read a book, pretend I'm there.
Oh, okay. I thought he was doing it like on the internet. I thought it would be so funny if
that
it was
would
just
be
a
really
photograph.
Funny. If you could just like a silent Zoom room while you're reading.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Everybody's microphone is muted.
It's a really weird time, and I can't wait to see all the graphic novels that'll come out that are like quarantine diaries. Because well, I love those quarantine diaries.
I wonder what's going to happen when, you know, when everything like, you know, is. I mean, nothing's going to be completely normal, but when everything is back and like just so many books coming out all at one time or something, you know.
Like, I was like, you're finally going to see people's pants again.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
You just have to remember to wear them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's what legs look like.
Yeah. Oh,
all right. So,
okay. Well, Lisa. This was awesome. Yeah.
This is so great.
Thank you,
thank
Lisa,
you
for hanging out
for
with us.
For inviting me.
Yeah, well, thank you. We, you know, we're a pretty casual outfit. I think we have, 9 subscribers right now?
Well, yeah, we just started this whole Zoom version. But yeah.
I'm excited that we got
don't tell like Lisa that we're like
no,
bare bones.
I just want to talk to you guys. I don't
I was going to say that, like, even though, you know, Zoom is so weird and everything, it just, I feel like we're connecting more than we thought that we would.
It is neat, like, when you have the Zoom, it just, instead of, like, sounding like a podcast or like an interview, it's just a bunch of friends getting together and talking, you know, just happen to be talking about a particular book and stuff like that, but I think that's kind of a neat, interesting format. It makes kind of listening to it feel a little bit more comforting.
Yeah.
You know?
It's really great.
And thank you for being our friend, Lisa. And thank you for coming to talk about this book.
Nice to meet you, Josh.
Nice to meet you. I love your book.
Thank you.
But everybody, you can still
I'll call it
get
up to
this book.
Yes, I'll hold it up.
Well,
mine is like, I think I put mine
mirror. Backwards.
Yeah, is mine backwards? Because yours doesn't look backwards.
Why is mine backwards?
It looks forward to everyone else.
Oh, okay.
Which is around for us. But you should definitely get this book at any local bookstores. You can call them up. There's many bookstores right now. There's one in Oakland called Spectator Books. They can call up and they will deliver it to your car as you pull up.
Oh, wow.
A lot of local bookstores, a lot of local comic book stores. Comic Experience does this. Flying Colors. Many bookstores. So go and get this and enjoy this for your quarantine. Also,
this is a great book.
Lisa, can you hold up Long Story Short? Because we don't have it right now. Long Story Short is amazing.
Moby Dick. You don't have to read Moby Dick.
So is that
Thank God.
Phantom Twin is from First Second. Who published
Long Story Short? Is Algonquin.
Oh, okay.
Algonquin Books.
Cool. Well, thank you again, Lisa, for visiting us, and hopefully we'll see you again soon.
Yes.
Yay.
Bye.
Yay.
Bye.